The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Coming up on today's program, toward the end, we'll talk about the grand sweep of history and prophecy. That's a quote from one of my father's booklets, and we fleshed that out a little bit yesterday with the college students, so we'll let you in on that that message as well. In recent programs, we've emphasized the influence of Satan the devil and all of his demons. You know about Revelation 12 and verse 12, where it says that Satan has been cast down to this earth. It says, woe unto the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea. After that happens, God says, woe unto the inhabitants of the earth. That would be us, those of us living on this planet. And it says that Satan has great wrath because he knows he has but a short time. And so he's stirring up hatred, animosity, division, and strife. This is why the world is in the trouble that it's in. Ephesians 2 and verse 2 says he's the prince of the power of the air. The prince of the power of the air. Mr. Armstrong talked about him surcharging the air around us with his attitudes, his impulses, his wrath, his anger, his hostility. We talked on Monday and even last week about this split, this division in the royal family here in the UK. And at Powerline, they said this really does illustrate the stark difference between some of the traditions of, in this case, the empire, and what we're seeing in our world today, in this 21st century, and the way that we worship celebrity and youth. It says here, the British monarchy is founded on a concept of duty exemplified by Queen Elizabeth II that is utterly at odds with the 21st century. Being a royal is a great job, most would say, but it inherently involves sacrifice. And so we've talked about how that the queen and others in the royal family are very much upset, and even others outside of the royal family, because Prince Harry is walking away from his duty, his responsibility. It says, the major royals devote a great deal of time to public service, and the royal family is supposed to be above politics. Meghan Markle, on the other hand, is a perfect exemplar of the 21st century. An American actress, she is, to begin with, a woman, this century's favored sex. And not only is she very good looking, she is the golden ticket of the 21st century, multiracial. So she's a woman, she's a celebrity, she's good looking, she's multiracial. It says, and a child of a time in which nothing is above politics, she is a highly political animal. And it talks about how close she is to Hillary Clinton. We spoke on Monday about the connection with the Obamas. There have been reports that she also has been advised, as has Prince Harry, by Oprah Winfrey. All of these celebrities, all of these very rich people here in the UK, in the United States. So here they make their way out of the royal family. And as I said yesterday, the Queen's been fairly diplomatic about this split. And we, of course, may not have heard the last of it as far as how it all settles or what actually happens once the dust settles. But here, it's not enough. Again, going back to Satan, his rage, his wrath, it's not enough that the family's divided. But here, they're on their way out, Prince Harry Meghan Markle. And one of the big stories today and yesterday here in the UK is how that they've been driven out because of racism. They've been driven out of the royal family because she's half black. And because the establishment or the media or the royal family maybe is racist. They had this woman on quite a few of the talk shows and the news programs just yesterday. And listen to this exchange. It's on ITB this morning. She basically says, well, of course there's racism. And the commentator, the journalist, the guy with the guy that's representing the morning program or this morning, he just very gently asks her, well, can you just give us some examples? And listen to how she responds to that. Clip one.
The reason why the racism experienced by Meghan feels so personal and it deeply resonates with a lot of people is because it's symptomatic of the culture of racism in the United Kingdom.
What examples do you have?
You see, that is another problem. When people keep asking what examples, it makes me question, where have you been the last 2 years? What have you been reading? What have you been listening to?
I've been reading some criticism. Right. I haven't personally read anything that I could say was based on racism.
And this is part of the problem.
This is a liberal journalist, keep in mind, and he's just asking this black woman, an expert in something, what's the evidence? Give me an example of how racism factors into this story. And then you have the reaction in the radical left. So many of them said they agreed with this woman. And now they're picking on this journalist. Who should have just said, yes, you're absolutely right. No need for evidence. No need for facts. The television media over here in the UK, almost all of it, swings far to the left. There are some newspapers, however, that have pushed back. More conservative newspapers that have called attention to the fact that this is just ridiculous on its face. It's just crazy. Piers Morgan, as I said the other day, he put up this tweet, all of these headlines, these front pages of newspapers, back when Harry and Meghan were married in the summer of 2018. The press over here just fawning over these two. Well, now the family has split. And we're told that racism is part of this story as well. Speaking of Piers Morgan, he pushed back on this, and you have to give him some credit for doing it on TV. There's not many of them that will. Clip two.
It is not my job to teach you about racism.
Yeah.
Why do you not know where the racism is?
But it is your job.
Let me finish. No, it is not my job.
Okay, I'll tell you what your job is.
Oh, no, don't tell me what my job is.
No, I'll tell you what your job is as a guest. I'll tell you what your job is as a guest on this program.
Oh, really?
As it has been when you've been a guest on all the other programs.
Yes.
And you've been getting a lot of traction online. Everyone's cheering you on.
That's not what I'm doing.
Because you like to say it's all driven by racism.
That's not what I said.
But when you're actually pinned down, when you're pinned down and asked,
sexism,
the racism
and misogyny.
Right.
And
where is it?
Where is it, he asked. When you're actually pinned down, when you have to prove it, you offer no proof. So here we are in a situation now where you don't even have to put forward any facts. And furthermore, if you ask for facts, that's racist. Going back to Revelation 12 and verse 12, Ephesians 2:2, this verse in John 8, again, these are all memory verses. Verse 44, it says, you are of your father, the devil, and the lusts of your father you will do. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth because there is no truth in him. He doesn't care about the truth. He doesn't want the truth to get out there. He doesn't want the facts to be presented. He's the father of lies. He's a murderer. He's filled with hate. He's filled with wrath. That's what our Bible says. And that's where so many of these attitudes are coming from. There is a source. One more from this exchange with Piers Morgan and this expert, so-called anyway, clip three.
When you say things like, it's racist media, and Britain has been racist...
misogyny, sexism, I mean, you're going to...
Oh, the whole range. I know. It's the whole range. What you haven't done is say...
That's a lie, because I have. Yeah. I've mentioned the racist and inflammatory language. I've mentioned the bigotry.
Yeah.
I've mentioned the ignorance. I've mentioned the fact that they've been racist behavior. What you want is to get a cut, you know, fork and knife, and to try and dissect, oh, shall I, you get this example. But I don't see this. And it's not my job to educate you.
Your job is to back up your statements.
I have backed it up.
Back it up with facts.
That's from ITV yesterday. And, of course, the media across the Atlantic, they pick up with that. The AP headline, questions of racism linger as Harry and Meghan step back. Of course, it was the New York Times that set this off last week. Black people know why she's leaving the royal family. We understand why. It's because of racism. The Sun, like Piers Morgan, pushing back some as well. It says, first they said Brexit was caused by racism. Now they're saying Megxit was caused by racism. This says far more about the prejudices of liberal left commentators than it does about the tabloid press. They routinely suggest Meghan's supposed mistreatment in Brexit Britain is no coincidence. They think Britain is a foul place full of foul people, brainwashed by foul newspapers, to hate the wonderful Duchess of Sussex and the brilliant European Union. See, we've got to praise this woman that's not happy in a royal family. And we've got to praise the European Union. We've got to put ourselves down. We've got to be filled with self-hate. But then praise Europe. Make sure we heap praise on all the minorities. And if you even ask a question, forget about being colorblind. When pursuing justice, if you even question someone, that's where they want to take this now. And all that this is, as the Sun brought out, is it's just another vicious smear from the radical left. And they don't care. They don't care that the race baiting just stirs up more hatred, more anger, more wrath. They don't care if it divides the country. Look at how terrified most people are, even as it is right now. Before Meghan Markle came along, look how terrified most people were of the thought of being considered racist. There was a story yesterday about these sex grooming gangs. There have been this was, of course, a big scandal in the 2000s, and there have been quite a few investigations that have continued that are even ongoing as we speak. And the real scandal here is how the authorities covered up these crimes, how they covered up the grotesque abuse, these sadistic pedophiles, and they covered it up because of race. Even when they had to come out and describe it, they said it was, older Asian men that groomed these young, vulnerable British teenagers, British girls. They raped them repeatedly. And these were, in most cases, Pakistani Muslims. But even the authorities were afraid. The authorities were afraid to bring it up. In some cases, this was reported just yesterday. I forget the publication, but it was happening all over the UK. We've talked about this before on the program. But this was with respect to Manchester, just about 90 miles north of where we are here at Edstone. And they investigated into it. They talked to the authorities involved. And here people admitted, I didn't want to go there. I didn't want to come down hard on these Pakistani men. I didn't want to be called Islamophobic or racist. And so they just turned a blind eye to the abuse. They had the names. They had the addresses of all the suspects, all the perpetrators. And they turned a blind eye to it. One example in this story yesterday was a young gal from Manchester. She was looked after by the state. She didn't have any parents. So she was in, I guess, the equivalent of the U.S. foster care system. The state was they were overlooking her. They were observing her. They knew her. And in fact, they knew it was going on. And they didn't do anything. That's how fearful people are of coming forward and saying anything. Even these clips we just played for you, you have to wonder if Piers Morgan is walking the fine line here. Maggie Oliver, she's one of the detectives who blew the whistle on this scandal. She said, 15 years, the perpetrators we knew in Operation Augusta were abusing generations of children and were allowed to walk free. I'm talking about people at the top of the police and at the social services, the people who knew the facts and chose to bury the truth. This is unforgivable. This is unforgivable, she says. And as part of the investigation, as I say, they questioned the police officers involved or not involved. They should have been. But the investigation says concerns were expressed about the risk of proactive tactics or incitement of racial hatred. Well, we have to let these sex crimes go on. We have to let these teenage girls be abused. Because we certainly don't want to be accused of hating another race. Unforgivable, she says. And one of the things you hear, it's quite common today, is that, well, okay, we made some mistakes, but that was back in the 2000s, and everything is different today. Listen to Maggie Oliver's response to that. This is from a radio interview, clip 4.
I'm like a broken record. I keep saying the same thing, and I hear the same apologies trotted out.
And we saw yesterday, didn't we? We said the Chief of Metropolitan Police,
absolutely,
how appalled he was. He wasn't there at the time. We've had the Andy Burnham, the Greater Manchester Mayor, and this happens every time there's
every
a new
time.
Report. We're horrified, we're so apologies. Sorry it won't happen again. Yeah.
And actually what they say then is, this was 15 years ago, things have changed. Well, I'm telling you, they have not. I have now set up my own foundation because I am inundated on a daily basis with stories and desperate letters and messages from people who are suffering right now.
People who are suffering right now. It's going on right now, she says. It continues. And it continues to be covered up. All of this scandalous activity. The cover-up continues. This is the world. This is the world today. This is the world in which we live in. This is the way it's been the last 20 years here in the UK, even before Meghan Markle came along. Now she comes along. And you have all of these critics of the royal family, of the British establishment, of the news media, saying that, among other things, well, they're racist too. Now, it's a little bit different, and when you compare the two countries, America, of course, has its deep, deep racial divide going back all the way to the days of slavery, and it's not like that with the relationship between whites and blacks here in the UK. And I think for that reason, it's not been as bad as in the United States, or just how with the U.S., it can take any incident or even statement of a leading official to trigger something. I don't think it's been quite like that ticking time bomb here in the UK, but you get the sense these last couple of days that this might be a turning point. We're witnessing a real escalation in tensions, and of course we know it's prophesied. We know whether in the case of the US or Britain, Isaiah 1 says that our cities are going to go up in flames. Now, of course, there's a literal application to that, but a figurative one as well. Violence. We're going to see more division in this country. We're going to see more and more people because we know Satan's the prince of the power of the air. And he's stirring up all of these perceived grievances, biases, racist attitudes. And there are racist attitudes, to be sure, on both sides. But Satan here is just fanning the flames of hatred. Yesterday there was that video of this Bernie Sanders staffer who was videotaped saying what would happen if President Trump was reelected this November. Listen to what this man said, clip 5.
So if Trump gets reelected, what?
In cities burn.
Bernie doesn't get the nomination. Where it goes to the second round at the DNC convention, it'll walk in Milwaukee. It'll start in Milwaukee, and then when they police push back on that, other cities will.
There's two individuals from Bernie Sanders' campaign that are in that video. One of them says if Trump's reelected, cities are going to burn. And then the other one said even if Bernie doesn't get the nomination, like if he loses out to Biden or to Elizabeth Warren, then Milwaukee's going to go up in flames. I think Milwaukee's where they're having their convention. Why so much dissatisfaction, discontent with our government today? The February trumpet, by the way, the riddle of government. If ever it was a riddle, boy, it is today. If ever a time you could say, yeah, it's quite the riddle. How do we get a government that works for people? But here we are. Now, again, people could dismiss that and say, well, he was a low-level staffer, and perhaps he was. But as we saw with the first election, the 2016 election of Donald Trump, look at how Antifa and those groups reacted to that. What's going to happen if he's elected a second time? And the Democrats, the radical left, they basically have to settle in for 4 more years? You think they're just going to go away quietly? Look at what they're doing now. Nancy Pelosi trying to run the Senate trial now, and having to go through witnesses again, they're insisting. We've got to get more witnesses. That was supposed to be done in the House, but they didn't get enough. So now they want more. And then you have these weak Republicans that won't stand up to it. And so they can't shut it down. They can't stop the nonsense. It just has to continue. And it does because Satan is filled with wrath. He knows his time is short. But look at the way these people think. We've told you before that clip or that quote from Mr. Armstrong about how that the radical left, the communist left, they want to destroy the system. They want to bring down the government and put something new in place, put their socialist utopian dream in its place. This is my father's program from 2014, America Under Attack, and he's quoting here from Mr. Armstrong's article back in 1956. Mr. Armstrong was right on top of this. He knew where it was headed. Clip 6.
Notice what Mr. Armstrong wrote in 1956, and I'll just quote it to you. A psychological warfare of propaganda, infiltration, subversion, demoralization that is coming upon America, he said. That is the goal of the communists. At least he certainly believed that at the time, and so do I. But they were inflicting that kind of warfare. He continues by saying, it is a warfare that has attacked our minds and moral and spiritual values rather than our bodies and our earthly possessions. He said it's a kind of warfare we don't understand or know how to cope with. It uses every diabolical means to weaken us from within, sapping our strength, perverting our morals, sabotaging our educational system, wrecking our social structure, destroying our spiritual and religious life, weakening our industrial and economic power, demoralizing our armed forces, and finally, after such infiltration, overthrowing our government by force and violence. Now, that was the goal of the communists, and it certainly was a part of what I'm talking about today, only it is a different enemy and about 10,000 times worse. And I want to show you one. I'm talking about an earth and a universe shaking event that occurred, and I mean that literally, which led to this attack that's now coming upon America and has been very focused for nearly two decades.
He's talking there at the end about, again, Satan and his demons being cast down to this earth. And the aim for these radicals is to overthrow the government by force and violence. Anything to weaken the institutions, the traditions of our nations. Sickness from within. Death by suicide, as Abraham Lincoln said. That prophecy in Isaiah 1 and verse 7 about cities being burned with fire. Here's my father in 2015 discussing that verse, clip 7.
Notice verse 7. Your country is desolate. Your cities are burned with fire. Your land, strangers devoured in your presence, and it is desolate as overthrown by strangers. Your cities are burned with fire. See, he's prophesying that it's going to get worse if we don't learn a lesson from God. He's pleading with us to hear his message and to listen to him and to fear him. But we have degenerated in our church, in God's own church. We have degenerated in God's own nations that have the name of Israel on them in this end time. And things are getting much worse very fast.
See all these things we're talking about here today. This is the middle of January, the calendar month of January. And this is going on even as the bushfires rage across the southeastern part of Australia. And of course, all of the turmoil in the Middle East. As PJ Media said recently, one would be forgiven for thinking the end times are upon us after events in Iran and Iraq. You could be forgiven for thinking that we're dwelling in the last days. We'll spend some more time on that on tomorrow's program, if we have time. That term, by the way, time of the end or last days, those are terms that come right out of the Bible. People talk about that a lot. They don't give the Bible enough credit. And it's astounding to see how quickly people get caught up in bizarre interpretations of prophecies. When if you're seriously interested in understanding the truth based on the sure word of prophecy, you can know the truth. You can know where this is all leading. And you can know the solution. When we come back, we'll finish today's program by delving into the subject of this grand sweep of history and prophecy. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. Don't forget to visit our website at thetrumpet.com. Every day, thetrumpet.com will help you understand your world by analyzing today's headlines under the clear light of Bible prophecy. Log on to thetrumpet.com and sign up for our daily Trumpet Brief email and subscribe to The Trumpet magazine. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
In speaking to our college students this week, I've used this example of Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, I guess, two or three times already. Just the fact that they would turn and walk away from Britain's royal family. A royal family that here in Britain goes back 11, 1200 years. Of course, its roots go even deeper than that. We know this from the United States and Britain in prophecy. And they just walked away. It's not enough to be a royal prince or a royal princess. There must be so much more to life than just being in the House of Windsor, serving the British people. The other day, I mentioned that example with Meghan Markle about how that she tried and tried to develop that British stiff upper lip. But in the end, she concluded, that's not the point in life. I've got to go out and do what makes me happy. I've got to go pursue selfish things. I've got to be concerned primarily about self-interest. Certainly not the royal family or the British people. Quite a contrast to what then Princess Elizabeth said in 1947. I serve. I played that for you the other day. You don't see that same mentality like the Powerline post pointed out. What a stark difference or contrast between Queen Elizabeth's generation and these young royals. Today, my father at the start of the Chronicles booklet, he says, this world is lost in the present. God is always challenging his people to keep the overview, to see the grand sweep, both historically and prophetically. The challenge for us as the royal family of God is to see the grand sweep, both historically and prophetically. Even if you leave aside prophecy, do you think if Harry and Meghan understood the grand sweep of just history, just the past 1,000 years, a line going back all the way to William the Conqueror, King John, Henry V, Henry VIII, Queen Elizabeth I, Queen Victoria, and they just walk away. It's not enough. It's not enough for them. God says, see the grand sweep, historically and even prophetically. Now you add those two together, and that's going to really anchor our spiritual foundation. It'll be solid. It'll be solid bedrock. Because we know where we came from and we know where we're going. And we're not going to walk away. We can't walk away. We can't walk away from this responsibility. We serve. Matthew 20. That's what Jesus said about the disciples of Christ. They're given a weighty responsibility in God's kingdom because they serve. Isaiah 46, verses 9 and 10. Says this about the grand sweep. It says, remember the former things of old, for I am God, and there is none else. I am God. So he tells us, remember the former things of old. Remember the old things. You find this admonition all through the Bible, all through the book of Deuteronomy, as Moses kept trying to tell the Israelites, you better remember this. Oh, and you better also teach this to your children. And then he told the children, you better ask your parents. You better ask them about the days of old. God says, remember the former things of old. I am God, and there's none like me. Declaring the end from the beginning. And from ancient times even, God says. The things that are not seen, saying, my counsel shall stand, and I will do all my pleasure. That's what God declares, the end. From the beginning. From ancient times. How deep is your love for this grand sweep of history and prophecy? How deep are your spiritual roots? Do you know who you are? Do you hang on for dear life to your identity, your heritage, your history? So much of this comes down to education, doesn't it? I told the students that yesterday. God's royal educational programs. There's just this undercurrent of hostility toward true education, diligent study, humbling ourselves before the master, the true scholar. Because we don't, I mean, in the world today, you don't want to submit to a master. You don't want to submit to a royal monarch. You want to be able to split away from that and to do your own thing, to be a celebrity, to get involved in materialism. Winston Churchill, the way that he went about his education, it's remarkable how much he just drove himself to study, to understand and to know his history, the history of the British Empire, the history of the Anglo-Saxon people, the history of his famous ancestors, the famous General Marlborough, the history of his own family, his father Randolph. This was a man who really wanted to know at least the grand sweep of his history. He didn't understand the significance of the sure word of Bible prophecy, but he certainly did delve into, deeply he did, he delved into history. In the 1930s, when he was in the wilderness, he was immersed in this biography about his famous ancestor, Marlborough. And Churchill was writing this, I forget when he started, it was probably 32 or 1933, and he continued up until 1938. So these were the years of darkness as far as his political career was concerned. And these were also the years of appeasement of Chamberlain and others who were just appeasing this tyrant, this dictator, this German leader that wanted to conquer the world. And even as that was going on, Churchill was writing a million-word biography. Have you ever written a million words? We give out some assignments to our students that maybe they're 2,000 or 3,000 words. How about a million? Have you ever even come close to a million-word project? It says in the biography, he's writing here, Churchill is, about Marlborough's era. It says, Europe protested against the military domination of a single power. The Holy Roman Empire pleaded for another century of life. The Dutch Republic sought to preserve its independence, Prussia its kingdom rank, and from across the seas in England, the Protestant secession, it says, parliamentary government, and the future of the British advance with confident tread. That was the 18th century world. And it was very similar to the world that Winston Churchill faced in the 20th century. He was studying his history and realized, going into the 1940s, that Britain was engaged in the same battle, the same struggle. Marlborough was fighting against France. And Churchill, of course, fought against the Axis powers. Henry Steele Commager, in his intro to Marlborough, he worked on putting together the abridged version of Churchill's book, or volumes. I think it was a 5-volume set. But this historian, Henry Steele Commager, he said, "It is not a distortion to see in Marlborough an embryonic Churchill acting out on what seems to us a more restricted scale, the role Churchill was to play with such splendor and bravura on a global scale. Like Marlborough, Churchill was called upon to rescue Europe from the grasp of a tyrant, to preside over a prodigious political and military coalition, to sustain allies who faltered and drooped, to fire the spirits of those who were reluctant, to assuage those who thought they contributed more than their share, to persuade British people to bear, over cruel years, the blood, toil, tears, and sweat of war." Commager says, "Surely this historical investigation, which for 5 years absorbed Churchill's energies, may be looked upon as a providential preparation for the years ahead, when he was to stand a greater Marlborough, surveying a greater scene, presiding over a greater battle, commanding a greater coalition, whose destinies were fraught with greater significance. It was just up on a grander scale. History repeated itself." And Churchill knew what action needed to be taken in the 1940s, largely because of his understanding of the grand sweep of history. Sure, he was a man of action, he was a man of courage, but he was also someone who saw the grand sweep of history. He saw it. And that project he was working on in the 1930s, the Marlborough set, it helped to prepare him for the monumental challenges that he would face in the 1940s when he finally came to power as prime minister. We talked a few weeks back about the 30 years history of the Philadelphia Church of God. How much has God been preparing us for the years just now ahead of us with this glorious history, the past 30 years? We're coming up to January the 16th, tomorrow. 30 years on. 30 years ago, we were packaging up that first mailing of Malachi's message, sending them out to addresses, first in Oklahoma, a few in Ohio, and then it spread from there. And that was happening in January 1990. And those first manuscripts of Malachi's message, they were landing in mailboxes right around this time, 30 years ago. And of course, 4 years before that, on January 16th, 1986, that's when Herbert Armstrong died. What a work. 93 years of age, 50 plus years in the ministry, serving God, serving Christ, and all that history. We're connected to it. We remind you of it repeatedly, over and again. Those are our roots. That's just the more recent sweep of history. of course, if you understand the fact that we're spiritual Israel, the Israel of God, God's church is the Israel of God, Galatians 6:16. So we go back all the way to ancient Israel in the wilderness. We go back thousands of years. Ancient Israel was just a forerunner of the Israel of God, spiritual Israel, the true church. Here's where we factor in prophecy. The church is to marry Jesus Christ. That's yet ahead of us. God is to establish a royal family that's going to serve mankind for all eternity. A glorious family that stays together. That stays together on the basis of love and unity and service and sacrifice. You don't want to walk away from that. There's nothing better out in this world today than that. And you know this because you see the grand sweep, both historically and prophetically. We can't be lost in the present. Andrew Roberts, well, I won't get into that quote. He just talked about how sensitive Winston Churchill was to Marlborough's, or people who would criticize his famous ancestor, and he would rise in defense of his famous ancestor in a hurry if he felt like he was being attacked. And there were those historians who did that, and Churchill said, nope, he was not just a great general, he's a great man as well. It says here in this book, The River War, this is one of Churchill's earliest books, and he, well, just to back up, Commager made this point about Churchill in the introduction to that Marlborough. He said about Churchill that he looked out upon world history, but he looked through British spectacles. Now, this wouldn't fly today, would it? Because we're constantly being told that Britain's evil, America's evil, and Europe is good, Meghan is good, a minority group here or there, they're good, but the empire, that's evil, and the superpower, evil through and through. This is what our young people are educated in today. Churchill thought differently. He viewed the world through British spectacles. It says, all his life, Churchill's eyes were dazzled by the glory of England, and all of his writing was suffused by a sense of that glory. And there's, I think it's Roberts, or one of the historians, that basically says you could, well, let me just read the quote first, and I'll tell you what the point is, that Commager, I see it in my notes. But this is Churchill in the River War. And he says, what enterprise that an enlightened community may attempt is more noble and more profitable than the reclamation from barbarism of fertile regions and large plantations. He's talking about the empire. He's saying, what could be more noble than this empire project? He understood the grand sweep, you see. He viewed the empire as a force for good that was going around and bringing blessings to the earth. People will disagree with that today. I know. Satan, remember, he's the prince of the power of the air. He's filled with wrath. He wants us to hate God. He wants us to hate our nations. He wants us to hate ourselves. He wants us to be negative. My father has a chapter in one of his booklets, A Positive View of History. King David, you look at the Bible, King David made a lot of mistakes. And look at the way God viewed him in the end. Well, even in the middle part, when God was correcting him, still, that was done in love. But in the end, it says that David was a man after God's own heart because of the way he repented and changed. He submitted himself to God's authority. Churchill said again, what enterprise that an enlightened community may attempt is more noble and more profitable than the reclamation from barbarism of fertile regions and large plantations, to give peace to warring tribes, to administer justice where all was violence, to strike the chains off the slave, to draw the richness from the soil, to plant the earliest seeds of commerce and learning, to increase in whole peoples their capacities for pleasure and diminish their chances of pain. What more beautiful ideal or more valuable reward can inspire human effort? Henry Steele Commager said that paragraph could have been inserted into all of Churchill's books. He loved to write about his own history, the history of his people. And of course, he was half American too. He had the long series on the history of the English-speaking peoples, including America. One of his favorite subjects of study was the history about the Civil War. U.S. Grant, Abraham Lincoln. The grand sweep, both historically and prophetically. Churchill was a man of empire. Are you a man or a woman of empire? Because God is about to establish his kingdom, headed up by the King, Jesus Christ. And Christ is to marry a royal bride. And so God says to us, remember the former things of old, for I am God and there is none else. I am God and there's none like me, declaring the end from the beginning and from ancient times, the things that are not yet done. The grand sweep of history and prophecy. Study your history. Study your history with God. Your history with God's people. Your history with the ancient Israelites. Look at how much inspiration we draw from those miraculous events that are all through the Bible, and they're even in our own history. I got quite a few, this is just recent history, but I got quite a few responses, emails, coming in response to that long email I read last Friday about God intervening to help that family down in Australia to save their home, to protect the family. And a lot of you were very much inspired by that and wrote and told me. It just shows how much we need to be reminded of God's mighty hand. Look at this inspired word. Coming together, God used something like 40 different authors, inspired the Holy Bible, the Old Testament and the New. Both testaments, a perfect complement to the other. God put it all together for our learning, so that we might be edified. And then you expand on out from there. If you understand the truth in the United States and Britain in prophecy and what God promised to give our people, the United States and Britain, in the early part of the 1800s, and what has happened since. If you see God, in varying degrees, shaping history, you're able to peer into God's mind and better appreciate how God thinks. Most people in this world get lost in the present. But as my father said, in that booklet, the Chronicles booklet, the challenge for us, the challenge for you, the challenge for me is to see, to really see this grand sweep, both historically and prophetically. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.